You are listening to episode 94.
And I also would like to introduce today the Okiki Video Bootcamp. Yes, I will be launching a course, which I will have a wait list in the show notes. And I will be launching some group coaching as well. I know there has been a lot of requests lately of people wanting to learn how can they create content for their own brands. And so I'm looking forward to bringing you along on the journey with that. If that's something that you've wanted to gain skills and techniques on, this will be for you. You'll learn systems on how to create content effectively and efficiently and have more time for yourself in the process while reaching your clients. Again, you can find the information for the Okiki Video Bootcamp in the show notes below.
On today's episode, I get to interview a licensed mortgage professional and also one of my friends, Joy Beauchamp. Joy is going to talk to us about the housing market, real estate, and the journey that led her to really entering this space because she really believes that everyone deserves a home and she wants to walk them through the process to do that. So we learn a bit about her story and background and her passion for this work. And by the way, if you are enjoying the Okiki podcast, be sure to leave a rating and leave a comment for us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and let me know, how are you enjoying the podcast and which episodes are standing out to you? By the way, this episode is brought to you by Okiki Consulting, where we empower brands to tell their stories through video content. So whether you need a video content strategy for your company, support with video editing for your content, or videography services, we are here for you and we offer it in English and French. And you can find us at okikiconsulting.com. And now on with today's episode.
Welcome to the Okiki Podcast, where we make inspirational people known. Brought to you by your host, Fionn O'Brien.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Okiki Podcast. And today I'm really excited to have not only a super knowledgeable guest on the podcast, but someone who I've gotten to know through the Well and Women's Networking Group. So she's awesome. Her name is Joy Beauchamp, and she is a local and licensed mortgage professional right here in Saskatoon. She makes really great content. And outside of mortgages, she's also someone who shares like what's happening in the community and keeps people up to date with events to go to and just an all-around fun person to be with. She also loves consuming cat content. And so I'm sure some of you cat lovers would be excited to hear that. And she also is with the TMG Mortgage Group. So thank you so much, Joy, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I feel so honored.
Yes, and I wanted to get into your story. I also wanted to say her name's Joy, and it's really awesome because we often have a lot of laughter when we meet up, and it just fits you very well. And so I wanted to get into your story and your educational and career path. And were you always wanting to be a mortgage professional? Like, how did you get here?
Yeah, it's a bit of a winding road. My background is actually child development. So I grew up in the north. I moved to Saskatoon. I took some child development education and I started working in nonprofits in childcare. And I worked in inner city and I worked for the Ministry of Education and I started licensing childcare facilities in the province and traveling around. The reason why I wanted to go into mortgages is when I was buying my first house, I was young, single, in my early 20s. I was a foster parent. I was sort of just like, not lost, but I was fine. But you're young. And it was suggested to me, why don't you talk to a mortgage professional and see if you could buy a house? And she was awesome. And I did buy a house on my own. So it was an amazing experience. And it just made me want to get in the business. I thought, this is such a great way to help people. Because when you own your own shelter, it's a different experience and it opens up things for you. And it opened up a lot of things for me. So it just stayed with me. And I actually took the education twice. So I took it about 10 years ago. And then I took it again 3 years ago when I was ready to actually get started. So it's been like a 10-year plan, but long winding road, but I got there.
Yeah, I find that really interesting. What was it about that experience working with that mortgage professional that made you like, I know you mentioned that it's a really nice thing to be able to offer people a home, but also like, what was it about it that made you think like, this is a good fit for me too? And this is something I want to begin to do more and more work in, considering you already had kind of a career path that was doing its own thing with your life.
I like the aspect of helping people. And it was like, it's just a cool job. I didn't actually meet her even then, whenever that was, maybe 12, 13 years ago. Everything was actually online already. And so you would be like a quick phone call at work or an email, you know, send me these documents or sign this or do that. And I guess it was just like, this is so user friendly. I don't have time to take time off work to go to the bank or sign or, you know, and at that age, you're just like, you're kind of all over the place. You're not like, oh, sure, I'll just drive over here and do this. It was just a really user-friendly and step-by-step easy process. And I thought, what a cool way. If I went to the bank, I probably wouldn't have gotten approved, number one, because she used some creative solutions. And number two, I wouldn't have gone there. Probably wouldn't have had that same personal experience. So that just sort of stuck with me. I thought, what a cool way to help people and be able to do that remotely. Like, what a cool job.
There's some interesting layers also to what you said. Like, I was curious because you mentioned you had a foster child at the time. So even though you're like in your early 20s, did some of that also influence your decision to, hey, like, I actually want to find a home and find something a bit more stable? Like, did that part of your life influence some of those decisions you were making, trying to make forward?
Because I didn't really plan it. I didn't think, you know, oh, I would be able to do this. It wasn't really on my radar at all. But I think there's something about having your own space, feeling like you have that stability to build your family in whatever way that is, right? So yeah, for sure. I was over the moon excited and it felt like the biggest accomplishment of my life, you know, at that time, really it did.
I would say, what was your biggest obstacle when you then started to venture out on your own and start this company? And how did you overcome it?
So it's really interesting. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that you are your own boss, right? Like, your brokerage is TMG, well, mine is. So you have to be licensed and you have to be tied somewhere. So it's similar to a realtor, right? There's different real estate companies and the person is sort of tied to that company. But that company doesn't send you clients, right? They're just sort of the licensing part of it, making sure you're in compliance and doing everything right. So that's something to know, is that you have to find people that trust you and want to work with you. And I would say that's the biggest challenge, is when you get started, you're kind of like, okay, where do I get the clients now? For sure, a struggle, right? For the first few months, you don't make any money at all. You don't have any clients. And it takes time to build that up. So part of the reason why I went online and why I started making sort of educational content is I realized a lot of people don't know this, even if they are already homeowners or even if they own multiple properties, they're just great reminders to keep people, you know, educated. And I just wanted to put something out there. Don't think about what I look like. Don't worry about that. Just put stuff out there and show people who you are. And so that really started to help. And then, you know, realtors wanted to work with me, or lawyers or other people wanted to send their clients my way because they could kind of see my personality, I think, and see who I was. So I think that's sort of how I overcame it, is just getting over yourself and putting yourself out there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you're like, okay, this is a challenge. I'm going to do something a little different. That's not happening in the space. And content creation, that's a really cool piece of what you do. I have to say, like, I'm starting to see more realtors create content, or like realtors more so. I can't think of another mortgage professional I know actively creating content. So I guess to make the distinction. So it's really cool that you're doing that. But I have seen realtors start to do that. This one, Brandy, she's on TikTok, and even she's a little different in that space, but she's like young like yourself and said the same thing. Like the door knocking helped to some extent, but the content really helped her connect with her clients. So I guess when you started connecting the dots with that, like, first of all, what was your process to even starting the content? And when did you really start to see the shift of it helping with those like clients coming to you and knowing who you are?
Yeah, so I probably wouldn't have been too interested in it when I first started. Like I was just posting just regular standard posts, no video content really. And then as part of my ongoing training, you're always like reading, you know, going to Zoom meetings, listening to podcasts, doing everything you can right at the beginning, just get so much information. And so one of the educational pieces I took, it was actually a training session through TMG. They offer a lot, which is really helpful. But this one was a guy who was, he helped with TED Talks. And so he came on and he just said, like on the Zoom meeting, just put yourself out there, look at the camera, say who you are, say what you do, and just put it out there. Don't look at it. Don't worry what you look like. Just put yourself out there. Just start talking to people, right? So that's just how I started. And I just was like, okay, I'll just say who I am and I'll just do this. Over time, you care less about, you know, how you look or how you sound. I think you probably know that really well. But yeah, that was sort of the process. I thought, I'm just going to do this because let's just do it. Not everybody's doing it. I'm going to try it and see what happens. And yeah, and I mean, I do have some clients come from social media, but honestly, it's a lot of referral partners. Like I work with a lot of real estate agents and financial planners and stuff like that, where they like to be able to share that with their clients. And then I get that referral.
It sounds like your content kind of reached like the partner audiences.
Yeah.
Before it reached. So that was like a different kind of target audience.
Yeah.
How would I expect? I can do that. And then that increased the sale. So it still had an important connection point for you.
For sure.
And then what would you say are some of the biggest, because you mentioned that in your situation, you wouldn't have qualified if you went to a bank. Why do you think the mortgage professionals are able to connect those dots for people outside of like a traditional situation? And what are some of the biggest myths stopping people from, I guess, even going for those opportunities, even now? With what's happening in the economy.
For sure. So I think one of the difference from the big banks, the traditional banks, and I work with some of them too, right? So I work with banks and I work with just mortgage only lenders as well. So I'm not like bashing banks at all when I say this, but I think sometimes the banks, they have so many clients, they're often understaffed. And so they are given so many clients, they don't have the time or the capacity always to take the time to dig deeper and see, okay, well, is there anything else we could do? Maybe we could look at it this way. Maybe we could use this other income or whatever. And they just have their couple of products. They're not able to look around like a mortgage professional can, where they can look at, oh, okay, well, Scotia's policy is this, TD's is this, you know, First National is this. You know, in my case, a big part of it was using the fostering income. So finding a lender that would allow that. Right. So that's probably what a big piece of it was at that time. And maybe if I went to the bank, they might have asked and they might have been able to at that time, but maybe not. Or they might have just said, no, we can't, you know, or they wouldn't have asked me. So yeah, there's a lot of different things like that. And I think nowadays people think that they don't want to waste anybody's time. They don't want to ask. They don't want to start an application. They don't want to start the process because they're worried, well, what if I don't? Or what if I change my mind? It's always better to plan ahead. And you know, people want to help. For us, when we're 100% commission and we're getting clients just from referral, you know, we want to work hard for you. Like every client's a VIP.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask, what are like the biggest things that you notice has changed in this space, especially post-pandemic?
Yeah. So the biggest thing for me is during the pandemic, you might've heard interest rates went really, really, really low and lower than they've been in 40 years. And so that was an interesting kind of space to be in. Now rates went up a lot since then. And the economy is still really busy though, as far as real estate goes. The numbers month over what's selling in Saskatoon in this area has been super strong. It's been like the same. So that hasn't changed anything, but it's changed how much people can afford. So they can afford less now that interest rates are higher. And so they're probably buying places a little bit, you know, on a smaller budget. So I'd say that's the biggest change. But, you know, the news likes to bring out these stories about people and they're terrible, right? And it makes everybody worried. In Saskatchewan, we don't really have those exact same problems. We're actually doing pretty well. Our values are good. I don't think that we're going to have any kind of recession where house values are going to go down. I really can't see that. And our economy is strong. We have a lot of people coming here. We have a really strong demand for housing. So I think whatever interest rates do, people are still going to need to move because they still need shelter.
If you don't mind, Aoife, talking a little bit about that, because I think when I see real estate in the news, of course, that's what sells the news, but it's very much like doomsday a bit and very extreme. And usually the extreme situations, as you mentioned, are on the coasts. So I don't always find a lot of information about what's happening in Western Canada, let alone Saskatchewan. And you kind of touched on it, but like, what is actually happening in our space versus the rest of the country? Because we're not having the same extremes that Toronto or Vancouver had, for example. And yeah, what would you say to someone trying to consume their real estate content from there and they haven't approached someone like you yet? Like, what should they be looking at actually in this journey?
You're right. It's really hard to find news that's local. It's pretty much, unless you're following, you know, the Saskatchewan Real Estate Board or a local realtor too. Like, that's what I would recommend. I'd say talk to local people, because real estate is always city to city. It's like its own, you know, micro economy, right? Like, it's totally different. Saskatoon is totally different than Toronto or Vancouver, where, you know, when the values swung up and people were trying to like wait in line to get into a house, buying stuff sight unseen, you know, it was a crazy frenzy. It was still busy here. And we did have lineups for showings and stuff like that, but our values didn't swing that much. The values just in Saskatchewan, well, Saskatoon especially, they're just kind of like slowly going up year over year, which is good. There hasn't been any crazy jump in price. And when interest rates go up, people expect that the house values will go down. And that just hasn't been the case, because there's not enough houses here for the people that are either migrating from other places in Canada to Saskatoon because it's more affordable to live. So there's a lot of that. And we have a ton of new immigration here. So people are being granted PR status if they move to Saskatchewan and live here for 3 years first. So we have a lot of people coming. We don't have enough homes. Like, right now on the market, we have about half as many homes as we should. So the demand's just super high. And I don't see that changing as people keep coming and wanting to live in Saskatoon. So real estate is a safe investment here, because we're not seeing those crazy swings in prices. They're just slowly going up. We have a really high demand. People want to move, and people are moving more often than they used to. You know, we talk about like our parents buying a house, living in it for 25, 30 years or whatever. People don't. People usually move once, then they move when they want to have kids, then they move again when the kids are bigger, then they move again when they're empty nesters, right? So they're moving often.
You touched on a lot of things going on, like the actual, like what's happening in Canada in terms of interest rates and stuff, but you also talked about immigration and all of that. So have you found yourself with all of the things happening in the environment, like busier over the last couple of years with people asking you questions, not just for content, but just for the fact of the space that you're actually in?
Yeah. It's increasingly gotten busier. And the last few months have been really busy, even though the interest rates have continued to go, you know, higher. It's just people need housing, right? I work primarily, honestly, with first-time homebuyers. And so there's a lot of people that want to get in that space, because when interest rates go up, the people who own the houses have to pay more. And so then they charge more for rent. So then rent goes up. And then I think people do the math often. They say, well, I'm going to be paying this much for rent. That's pretty close to a mortgage payment. And then they want to get that conversation started. So I feel like rents going up, different things like that have also been factors.
And for my listeners today, maybe we could have some basic 101. You made a post recently about the difference between paying $2,000 for rent and $2,000 for mortgage. So for someone approaching you for the first time, as a first-time home buyer, what would be some of the basics that you feel they need to have in place as they're getting ready for that first purchase, especially in today's environment?
For sure, for sure. I would just say plan early. Like I said, a lot of people don't want to waste time and they don't really know. Even if you're planning in 1 or 2 years, honestly, it's great because any problem can be fixed in 1 or 2 years. So even if somebody has like applied for bankruptcy or something, you know, really extravagant has happened, we can fix that if we have time and we can get everything perfect for when the timing's right. So I would say always plan early. You're not wasting anybody's time. You're just being responsible. So definitely do that. The other thing is ask questions for yourself. There's so much information in the media. It's not always really applying to what's happening here. You know, we'll get information from our parents or our families, but they're often not the most up to date because policies are always changing and they're coming from sort of a different mindset and different experience than, you know, what's currently happening too. So I'd say make sure you talk to the right people. Make sure you talk to somebody that you're comfortable with. The third thing I would say is just don't buy a car.
Why is that part?
Okay, so
for sure.
It seems like a lot of times people, you know, you graduate school, and I actually did a similar thing. So I graduate college or whatever, and then you're like, I'm going to go buy a car. But as soon as you have that car loan, it's easy to get a car loan. Anybody can get a car loan. No one cares really about anything that you do or how much money you make barely. Like, they don't care. They're just going to give you a car loan. That brings down what you would be approved for a mortgage by a lot. Like a significant amount if you have a car loan. So it's always like, drive the crappy car. No one's going to judge you. No one really cares what kind of car you drive. Buy something in cash, something cheap until you get a house. If you're planning to buy a house, once you're in the house, do whatever you want. You know, get the Tesla, whatever you want.
Wow, that's so interesting. And sorry, you brought up another thing in that video about like the difference between like the renter and the debt for the mortgage. And I was wondering if you could like touch on that too.
For sure. So in the mortgage application, when I take somebody's info, I'm looking at all of their sources of income. So, you know, typically it's like their job. If they're retired, we can use pension income. We can use like child support if they receive that. You know, there's different sort of streams. We want to get all of their income first. And then we look at all the debts too. So we look at the credit, pull the credit score. We can see like student loans, car payments, credit cards, lines of credit, things like that. If they've all been paid on time and how much is owing. And then we, you know, make a proposed mortgage, you know, let's say a house of $400,000, whatever they said they had for a down payment. And then what is the net mortgage amount? And what is that payment? And then we look at other housing costs. Like we always have to include heat for every house. So that's a small thing we add. And then we always have to add a property tax amount. And that depends area to area and cost of house, not to bore you to death with it. But basically, we're looking at how much is everything that the client owes, including a mortgage, property tax, heat, student loans, everything. We take everything that they owe and divide it by what they make. And that's called the debt service ratio. And so the numbers have to be aligned for me to be able to send a mortgage application to a bank or a mortgage lender. And if the numbers are beyond what's allowed, you really can't get a mortgage at that point, right? So we have to bring it down. We have to bring those ratios down either by adding income or subtracting debt. And when you get a car, no one's looking at that debt service ratio at all. They're just like, oh, you have a job? Great. You know, here's the keys.
No, thank you for breaking that down for us. And I wanted to kind of get into like why you wanted to do the work. And you said you really want to help people. So I was wondering if you could share your most heartwarming story, if you're able, in this space, and maybe one of the most shocking experiences you've had in this space.
Yeah, when I grew up, I didn't come from a lot. I grew up in a really isolated community. I joke that I was homeschooled in the woods, but it's actually not a joke. And so I didn't come from a lot. So I think why I actually wanted to help people become more, you know, smart with their finances and just know more is because I felt like I didn't have that. And I saw what a difference in your life it can make if you have that. So that's been a big push for me. So that's, I guess, like my push behind that educational side. My most heartwarming story I've got a few, but I'll say one. I had this woman come to me and she had a bad experience. She had a long-term spouse who had left. Before he left, he had put a bunch of just different business things, loans, different things in her name that she didn't really realize were in her name, and then racked them all up and disappeared. And so she had all of these people calling her for money, and she didn't have anything to give her. She wasn't in that position because he essentially left with everything, and she was left with the kids and all of this debt. And so she had to apply for bankruptcy. And so when you apply for bankruptcy, they take all the loans away, but you have no credit. You have nothing now. She was starting from zero. And so she came to me, she was working with somebody else. And she came to me and she basically said, like, what can I do? And so we made a full plan. So we said, you have to save this much. You're going to need, you know, your parents' help. Somebody's got to help you out and come on the file because of, you know, the past. We have to wait this amount of time, you know, and we made a full plan. And then when the timing was right and she said, okay, I've done all these things. I said, go ahead. Okay, go put an offer in on a house. So she went house shopping. She put an offer in on a house. Long story short, she's in the house. Like, she got there all on her own, coming back from such a horrible situation. And it was just so great for her and her kids to have their own place.
And it's amazing that you're able to like see like, okay, this is what we're dealing with and this is the plan. Because I'm not sure if people know that mortgage specialists also do that with people. So thank you for bringing that up, that like even in that situation, you're able to go like, okay, like, let's see what we can do with for your end goal, in spite of how chaotic that situation was. How can we reset this whole, I guess, process? So yeah, thanks for sharing that one. Also your shocking story?
That one was pretty shocking. I had actually another one. I do seem to work primarily with women. I have male clients too. I work with everyone, but I do have a lot of women clients. But I would say it's usually something with a divorce or separation and it not going well. I had another one where the ex-spouse just like moved to another country and wouldn't sign anything or like finish the paperwork to finish a separation, or just was basically disappeared. And when that happens, the person can't really move on because the ex-spouse is on the current mortgage and on the title for the property. But if they won't like sign a mortgage renewal, your mortgage will auto renew into a really high fixed rate or a variable, but it'll be like 9% for 6 months at a time. If that person won't sign off on it for you to take over the house, you can't do anything. And so this client was stuck in limbo for many years. And we started working together maybe like 2.5 years ago. And when everything has to go through the courts and that, it's long because you have lawyer fees. You have a really, really high mortgage payment. You're responsible for everything on your own. And we were able to remove that person and move on and get her new mortgage. And we were able to finish it. But I would say just the length of time to do that. And sometimes people have joint accounts and it doesn't end well. And that person doesn't pay what they're supposed to pay. And it shows up on the other person's credit. So it's not to scare anyone from getting married or doing things together. But I think like think hard before you do joint accounts and joint things, right? Because if your name is on it, you're responsible for it, whether you took out that money or not.
Wow, that's so interesting because you get to see the other side of things and like how that works and how like some things people would think are like automatic, obviously, in relationships, but not thinking about the full implications of what that could or could not mean. And I don't know, everyone's journeys, I guess, are definitely unique and different, but it does make you think a little harder about who you're partnered with in that way. Especially for the more serious situations. So thank you for being honest and sharing that. And I guess I want to ask, where do you see the work you're doing going in the next like few years, like next 3 years or 5 years? Where do you see the way you're sharing with people, either through content or the work you do going?
It's been so busy. So I honestly haven't even really been planning. I've just been riding the wave. But I would like to just see so much more education. I'd like to do more in-person seminars, free opportunities for people to come. I did one a couple weeks ago. You know, I have another one coming up in a week, but I'd like to just be able to, for people to just get the information and then be able to make a decision about what works for them. So I'd like to continue that side of however that looks. But I just feel like there's space for that. And people seem to want the information, maybe want to take steps, but they, like I said, afraid of, you know, maybe not having all the information or afraid of how it might look, when really that doesn't matter. I've seen it all. There's no judgment. There's always someone worse than you.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think that's definitely an awesome route to go, especially even like financial information. I feel like it's only in the past couple of years I've seen a lot of people on YouTube start to do stuff like that. Stuff that I definitely wish I knew like in high school. And like, it's not just readily available, but it's like real life. And so sometimes I wonder why we don't have some of that education a lot sooner. So I think that's an awesome route that you're going with. And I guess my final question for you is, what do you value the most about the position that you're in today?
I have a really good job. I feel like some people might think it's the most boring job ever. And maybe it is in some aspects, but I really love it because I feel so honored to be able to work with people and have people trust me with their personal information. You know, people are very honest with me and they give a lot. You have to be able to be approved for, you know, when you're asking for hundreds of thousands of dollars, you kind of have to bare your soul, right? And I feel really honored to be able to do that and be able to see people make good decisions and get to where they want to go. And I get compensated to do the best job ever. So for me, like, I love it and I can work with people in a lot of different ways. But yeah, I just feel honored to be able to do that.
Thanks so much for sharing, Joy, and just sharing the range of experiences. I'm sure the audience will be very intrigued by this story today and probably want to reach out to you for education. So where can the audience find you to learn more from you and your content and possibly, yeah, get your support as well?
Yeah, you can find me, honestly, if you just Google my name, Joy Beauchamp. If you don't know how to spell my last name, no worries. I'm on at Joy Mortgage on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. So I'm pretty easy to find everywhere that way. And thank you so much for having me, Fionn. This is so great to talk to you. I just love talking to you.
Yes, likewise. I was like, this will be a fun interview because I'm basically interviewing one of my friends. For sure. So no, thank you so much for bringing this value today. And yeah, it was an honor to have you on the podcast as well. I can't wait to share this much needed information. So thank you for all the sharing you did today.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Fionn.